Tonight, on a very special edition of Put Up Your Spooks, two new shows enter the ring.
To compare, contrast, delight, and devour. This week's theme...
Dark arts. Tortured artists?
Torturing artists.
Ooh. My name's Jeff.
My name's Ryan. And this episode is brought to you by the letter...
B, for Between the Teeth. A collection of horror and sci-fi short stories by Jeff C. Carter.
Hey, that's you.
That's me.
What's up with that there book that you're talking about?
Oh, this little thing? It's available on Amazon right now. Kindle Unlimited. Free if you're in the Kindle program.
Where do I sign?
Amazon? I don't know. But in honor of one of my stories about a mad sculptor, I thought tonight our theme should be Dark Arts. A show about crazy artists. So what better place to start?
What better art to start?
Then with 1987's The Hitchhiker. So, Ryan, have you ever seen an episode of The Hitchhiker?
I'll do you one better. I've never even heard of The Hitchhiker.
I remember The Hitchhiker from back in the day. It was originally an HBO series, as we shall see. But I feel like it was on USA, maybe heavily edited at some point.
It would have to be heavily edited.
But every episode starts with a ruggedly handsome hitchhiker in, like, jeans and a leather jacket. He's our crypt keeper. He's the one who's bringing us all these strange, sordid tales.
He's a less bonable crypt keeper.
He tells a story that goes a little something like this. So we start with Luther Redmond, who's reading a creepy funereal passage from the Bible to the corpse of a young woman in a coffin. Then he decides he wants her back, slams the coffin shut, jumps into his Mustang, and just peels out. So already this episode is going like 90 miles per hour, and it's awesome. Luther Redmond, by the way, is played by Mr. Fred Ward from Remo Williams, Tremors, Cast a Deadly Spell.
Tremors, that's where I'm thinking of him from.
He drives by the hitchhiker, who has this to say.
In universe.
That's right. The hitchhiker is actually in the world of the story. He's on location.
He could affect things, but like the Watcher.
Like Uatu, the Watcher on the Moon, he only records.
Yep.
And what's kind of funny is that the next character we meet is also walking down the side of the road in need of a ride. So it's kind of weird that he drives past the hitchhiker and up to this other lady, and he's like, hey lady, hop in the car. And you're like, who's this lady with struggling with this big suitcase? And it turns out that it's his ex, Ariel.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean,
I was a little confused on that part. It opens with him staring at a half-burned corpse,
which is her.
So that was a flashback
or a flash forward. It's a little timey wimey.
Yeah. Right.
We'll get into it. So he's driving down the side of the road, and it seems like he happens upon this random woman, but she's very mad at him, and we can infer pretty quickly that she's a jilted ex-lover. He's trying to get her in the car. She wants nothing to do with him because she's storming out. He promises to give her a ride to the bus depot. And so she gets in the car, and he's kind of being nice, and he's like, no, I promise I'll take you to the bus. And then he drives past the bus so that she misses it, starts driving like a maniac, slams on the brakes, kicks her out of the car. And you're like, okay, this guy is a real jerk. Like, this must have been a bad breakup. Then he runs her off the road, and she, like, has to, like, jump off into a ditch. All right, this guy's, like, gone, like, zero to psycho in under 60 seconds. And so she's collapsed on the side of the road. He jumps out and starts, like, reciting poetry to her. So this guy is super messed up. There is a really bad relationship. But he gets her back in the car, takes her home, puts her in bed, and lets her rest up. that night he's in his barn working on his art or whatever, and a young drifter named Cal shows up and tries to steal one of the cars. Luther, you know, busts him. He's not upset. He's like, hey man, there's no engine in that. You're not going to get very far. This young man, Cal, you know, wants to get out of there, but Luther lures him in with an offer of a modeling gig. And he's like, kind of checking him out. He's like, turn around. He's like, yeah, you're perfect. And he shows him a newspaper with a front page story about a tragic murder-suicide. And he says, this is the inspiration for my new sculpture. And I guess Cal is going to be one of the models. So Ariel sticks around. You know, even when she wakes up, she's kind of just stuck there in the middle of nowhere in this barn. And I guess she knows what happens if she tries to walk to the bus again. So she takes an immediate shine to Cal, and Luther dresses the two of them up like the dead couple in the photographs, and he makes them pose on the hood of a car. And he's like this weird taskmaster. He makes them hold these poses for hours, and he's taking all these photos. And at some point, Luther reveals a childhood memory of a car crash he saw when he was a little boy. Clearly messed him up real bad.
It doesn't make sense because there's no little girl posing in his photographs or whatever he's doing.
I mean,
kind of dark art he's involved
the
with.
The inspiration for his dark art was the murder-suicide in the newspaper, but maybe you could trace it all back to...
It all started there.
Lost innocence. Automotive. Homicide. I don't know what you want to call it. When they're done with the photo shoot, Ariel goes outside and she begs Cal, the drifter, to take him away with her. Almost immediately, she just takes him to the barn, strips down, jumps his bones, and there's a lot of nudity. It's very much an HBO show, sort of prime 80s love scene. All the while, Luther is sculpting replicas of their bodies and, like, posing them on the car, and then he busts out a freaking flamethrower.
A very big flamethrower.
A big flamethrower, and he's quoting the Bible, like all this, you know, fire and brimstone stuff, while he's shooting the bodies and burning them up. He summons Cal and calls Ariel a harlot. Cal defends her, but Luther claims that she uses these same old stories to seduce men. And he's like, oh, what did he tell you? Did she beg you to take her away with him? And, you know, she does this all the time. Put it all behind you. And then he actually gives Cal his car keys. And he's like, just go on, get out of here. This is a messed up situation. You're better off without her. Trust me. She's using you. And Cal kind of accepts, like, all right, I'm being played here. All I really wanted to do was get a car and get out of here. That's why I came to this crazy barn. And now he's got the car keys. So that night he's ready to leave. And when Ariel goes out to meet him, he turns the headlights on her and he like revs the engine. And he's really upset. And it looks like he's about to run her over. And behind them in the shadows, Luther is watching all this and just like totally getting off on it. Like he has set this plan in motion, this murder-suicide that inspired his art. But Cal is just too gentle a soul, and he lets Ariel in the car, and together they decide to just bust out. So they drive out with the car, and Luther freaks out. They're actually getting away. They're not going to kill each other. So he grabs the flamethrower, and he goes after them. There's a short chase, and Luther kind of heads him off with the flamethrower. And he's shooting the car, and they barrel into him. They pin his body to a tree. The flamethrower tank goes up, engulfs all of them in flames in a huge explosion. And then who steps out of the shadows? It's the hitchhiker. The hitchhiker says, when Luther Redman was unable to do evil, he provoked it in another. But they turned the tables on him and destroyed him. And I thought that was pretty interesting, because Luther was clearly... very religious, to put it mildly. And I think he wanted to do all sorts of evil things, but I think what he really wanted to do was get other people into doing evil things.
Was he trying to get Cal to ram her with the car?
I think he wanted them to kill each other.
Hmm.
I think he wanted to create a murder-suicide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that was the episode.
You'll be happy to know that I did not watch this episode in a tiny corner of my computer screen.
I'm pleased.
Whilst at work. However, I was still confused because the episode started and she was walking down the street. And then he, like, drove up beside her and was like, "Hop on in, little lady." And she was like, "You asshole. Unless you promise and cross your heart, I'm not getting in this car." And then she looked behind them, and there was what I thought was like a some kind of conversion van or something. I guess maybe it was the bus that was coming.
It was the bus, yeah.
But I thought it was like somebody that was following her that she was trying to get away from, so she had no choice but to get into the car with the artist guy. Oh, and then he like ran her down with his car and knocked her unconscious, and then he was setting her up in his house on the bed and like holding a dress over her, which because the opening scene was him looking over a half-burned corpse, I thought he was trying to recreate, like, his dead wife, and he was, like, he was measuring up her dress against this woman that he met on the road.
I got
then. So then I was like, yeah. Why doesn't she just leave? Why is she staying? Is he paying her really well? I didn't get the part where they had been, like, together previously.
I think Ariel and Cal were both survivors of abuse. I mean, it was a little more explicit with Cal. He'd been in a fight, and he'd left home, and he was very sensitive about being touched. He was very easy to manipulate, and I thought it was kind of sick how Luther would kind of collect these damaged people that he knew he could manipulate, and that was his dark art. You know, Ariel was clearly in a very, very dangerous, abusive relationship, and sometimes she tried to leave, but she was kind of looking for a way out.
Right.
Like I said, she knows what happens if she grabs her bag and tries to head to the bus stop. He's just going to run her off the road. But it was very confusing because it does start with a sculpture of her in the coffin half burned.
Yeah, pretty grisly.
It was grisly. You think it's a real body, but then you realize later
it's a mannequin?
A sculpture. Yeah, because he made sculptures of them based on the photographs.
Right.
I thought the episode was really beautifully shot. Unlike a lot of the trash we watch.
Yes, agreed. I didn't think it was garbage.
In a way, I kind of feel like, albeit tragically, Cal and Ariel kind of found each other, overcame their abuser, and achieved some sort of escape, even though they all died in a fiery blaze.
Thanks for nothing, Hitchhiker.
I'm kind of glad we picked that one. It's a lot like my story from Between the Teeth called Sturm und Drang, which was about this crazy sculptor from the 18th century named Franz Xaver Messerschmitt. And Messerschmitt was infamous. Not only was he hyper-detailed, hyper-realistic at sculpting the human form, he would torture himself and watch himself in a mirror. And, like, watch all the crazy,
faces sculpture
he would make. He had a series of busts he called the 64 Canonical Grimaces. He was into magic and necromancy. This is a real guy. A real, like, crazy genius. And he believed that there was a spirit that was angry with him for creating such perfect art. And that this spirit would visit him at night and torment him. And so he was doing these things to himself and sculpting these things as a way to appease the spirit. And when I found out about this guy and when I saw his sculptures, I was like, I've got to tell a story about this. So you can find that story and others in my new collection, Between the Teeth.
Where do I sign?
Jeff C. Carter.
I broke with tradition slightly this time and chose a show that's not really an anthology show because the main character, Marshall, and his sidekick, Simon, aren't telling you stories that they are apart from. They're 100% part of the story. They're always the protagonists.
What show are you talking about?
I'm talking about Eerie, Indiana.
You know, I have heard a lot about this show, never seen a single episode.
It only lasted one season in the early 90s.
But I do think it counts as anthology, because I bet you never see the same characters twice other than the main characters.
Yeah, for the most part, you never really revisit too many of the...
the incidental players.
Yeah.
And Marshall actually kind of steps out, in a sense, and does voiceover during the story from time to time.
Yeah, he's kind of calling the shots
as
he sees them.
He's kind of like the hitchhiker of this
Except
series.
That he affects the goings-on.
True.
Because he's a fucking hero, unlike that goddamn hitchhiker. So the episode in question is like way towards the end of the season. It's called Who's Who. And Marshall and Simon... Marshall is this kid who has moved to Erie, Indiana, which is... Spooksville, USA.
Erie, Indiana is the center of weirdness for the entire planet.
And he knows it, but nobody else knows it. Not his family, not his sister. The only one who believes him is this kid, little kid Simon. So his best friend is like 5 years his junior.
I thought Simon was his little brother.
Nope, they're just buds.
Oh, my bad.
This is the problem with jumping into a series at the end of the first season. So Marshall and Simon go to the World of Stuff, which is this big department store where you can get literally anything, including magical items.
Interesting.
But much like Sardo's shop from Mario Fred of the Dark, I don't think the proprietors really know, because again, nobody believes in the spooktaculariousness of Erie, Indiana, except for Marshall and Simon and the occasional denizen who happens upon a magical object.
Do you think it's the kind of thing where if you grow up in it, you don't realize it's weird?
Probably. It affects your brain. But Elvis is on his paper route, Bigfoot goes through his garbage, etc. and so on. So they go to the World of Stuff, and there's all these crazy white trash kids wrecking up the place. Marshall's only stopping in because he wants to call home because he lost his bike. So one of these crazy white trash kids is messing with some girl under the counter.
Tying her shoelaces together.
They chase that kid off, and she's like, oh, thanks. Her name's Sarah Bob. So they all become friends. So they tell her about the bike, and Sarah Bob is something of an amateur artist. So she draws a picture of Marshall's bike so that he could put up wanted posters or whatever.
Well, she says she's an amateur artist, but
she doesn't really believe in herself.
She's very talented.
She's no Sylvester Uncas. And Marshall's like, yeah, looks just like my bike, except mine doesn't have a flag like this one, but it's pretty good. The only thing you got to do is, before you're a real artist, is you got to sign your work. And just at that moment, one of her little brothers steals her last pencil, so they have to buy one from the guy who runs the World of Stuff, who sells them an Erie number 2 pencil. So she signs the drawing, gives it to Marshall, and then Simon and Marshall go outside after calling his mom. And what do they see but Marshall's bike right outside, except it has a flag.
Just like her drawing.
Yep. So Marshall's mom is like, why the fuck did you call me out here for nothing? Get your asses home. And then Sarah Bob comes out and is like, ha 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 hi. Because her mom, as she says, is out traveling, quote unquote. Marshall and Simon go home. His parents kind of get on his case because he was supposed to paint the garage door, and they've been making excuses for weeks upon weeks.
You had said that the mom was pissed and that they were getting on his case, but she says that she's on the verge of disappointment.
Yeah, well, they're
really
still progressive. They're
taking you know, the kid glove approach to these kids, but when it comes to their own daughter, they're just ruthless.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, she's like, hey, I did some art. And then she was showing them all sorts of interesting drawings she'd done. And they're like, oh, that's great if it's upside down.
Careful, honey. She's liable to cut off her ear. Oh, I'm teasing, Cindy. You just draw what you feel. You feeling okay?
Everyone in her family dunked on her.
That's only because she sucks.
I think that's a B plot that will be mirrored in the other family we see.
So they're making some excuse why they can't paint the garage door, and a cop shows up, and he's like, hey, you, I know all about you. I know about your moles. I know about your cavities. I know about what you do when the lights go out.
How'd you know all that?
He takes him outside to his squad car. Sure enough, there's Marshall's bike. It turned up. So now he has two identical bikes, one with flag and one without, and they think this is suspicious. So neglecting once again to paint the garage, they figure something's up, and they pedal their one brand new bike and one found bike over to Sarah Bob's house, which is a gross cars up on blocks overgrown shithole, and they can hear the brothers just crashing around the inside. Sarah Bob's up on the roof doing her sketching because she's waiting for her family to miss her, Which they and they kind of dunk on her too. Like Simon's not giving her any slack.
They dunk on her so many times in the next 5 minutes. It is brutal.
Simon goes, "I think you'll have a long way to wait," or something.
Yeah.
So they ask her about the bikes. They realize that something's fishy with these drawings. So they, she takes them inside. They meet her dad, who's just drinking beers on the couch.
Bob.
Yeah, all the brothers are named something Bob, and she's Sarah.
Lou Bob, Mo Bob.
And her mom is gone. Her mom left when she was just a little baby.
Mom Bob.
And so they go to her room in the basement where she can do laundry. And I forget, Simon says something else asshole-ish to her, but I can't remember what he says.
He's like, "You live in the laundry room?" He's like, "Ugh, your family's a bunch of disgusting monsters. Why don't you have a mom? This is like no family I've ever seen. Are you poor? Gross.
Why don't you brush your hair out of your face?"
Yeah, it's it was uncomfortable.
Simon's, he means well, but he's just a little guy, after all, in a big world. Marshall's crushing on Sarah Bob pretty hard, so I don't think he's dunking
on her. Was he negging her? Maybe.
Yeah.
That's a pickup artist shit? Where he's like, if I just make this poor, put-upon, motherless girl feel even more like garbage, perhaps she'll fall in love with me?
He's trying to show her how much her life sucks so that she'll run away, possibly with him. So they see one drawing, which looks very familiar, but she kind of covers that up. It's a drawing of a beautiful woman in a dress. Her little brother comes down and is like, "Do my fucking laundry." And she's like, "I'll burn your laundry." And she draws a picture of him really hastily, naked, and signs it with the Erie number 2 pencil. And the next thing you know, that little kid is running around outside completely naked. So like, whoa, it's the signature. It's this pencil. Marshall says, "Don't sign anything until I get back." But by this time, she's got the fever. So Marshall and Simon get back home, and Dad is like, whoa, Marshall, yeah, this is not what I had in mind. And they look at the garage door, and it's a ripping portrait of him and Simon riding hogs down the highway with the sun setting behind them. And Dad says, "I want you to, as long as it won't stifle your creativity, paint over this before your mom gets home."
And there's that double standard again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he doesn't like it.
But yeah, it comes out in their attitudes, which is even though he was supposed to paint the garage and he did this cool, like, side of a van, biker mural. He's like, if it's okay with your artistic sensibility, you know.
Yeah, but boiling under the surface was the implication of, "I'll tan your hide unless you paint this white." So Marshall's like, "Where's mom's gone?" And the dad's like, "Yeah, she vanished. I don't know. It was weird." Oh, and just at that moment, Simon comes to the realization that that picture that looked so familiar was someone he knew very well. So they rush back over to Sarah Bob's house, and the dad answers the door, and he's like wearing a sweater, cleaned up, sober. He's leads them into where his little angel is getting primped and pampered by all her angelic brothers. They're cooking her souffles, they're giving her manicures, and Marshall's like, "What have you done? You've ruined everything. This isn't your real family. You can't just control things. Families are terrible and force you to do their laundry." And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about, but if you'll excuse me, we're getting ready for my mom's coming home party, welcome home party." Marshall's not having any of it. He grabs her drawing of her angelic family and tears it apart, and they all turn to paper, Nightmare on Elm Street style, and tear off into oblivion.
That was a risky move, because If it had been
the actual family.
The actual family just bathed and in clean clothes, he could have murdered them all.
He could have murdered them, but more likely they would have just turned back into their white trash selves.
Look, I don't know how these Erie
number 2
pencils
work.
The
rules are a little sketchy, because so what she has done is drawn another version of her family and put her actual family in the fishbowl where they aren't drowning, but I don't know. That's magic again. They erase the signature off of that drawing. The family comes out, and they're like, "Well, maybe they'll have learned their lesson." And they're like, "Fuck you! Do my fucking laundry! Where's the dinner?" And they start breaking stuff.
But that's the emotional catharsis, where he's like, "You need to talk to them and
tell
them how you really feel."
And then Marshall says, "No, now's your chance. Like, tell them off." So she's like, "Screw all of you, family. I'm not doing your chores. I'm not your slave. Not anymore." And then they continue to tell her to fuck off, and eat their boogers. And she's so in a fit, she runs and locks herself in her room to be with her mom. And Simon and Marshall break down the door with their shoulders. They really give it the old heave-ho, put up their spooks, etc. Who should be in there but Sarah Bob and Marshall's mom, who doesn't recognize him, and she's all crazy and princessed out, combing Sarah Bob's hair. That's when Marshall gives her his little speech about families and how he needs his mom, and Sarah Bob's real sad, but she knows she's in the wrong, so she tears up that picture or something, and Marshall's mom disappears. So the weird thing is that this drawing brought Marshall's actual mom here and zombified her, instead of creating a second mom.
Unlike the family.
So that was the real risky move, because that was actually her.
Right.
And then Sarah Bob's like, well, peace out. And she fucking draws a picture that we don't see and disappears.
At first, it kind of looked like a blank page. And I was like, oh my god, did she just wiped herself out of
existence? But it turns out she just drew herself away to Paris with a mom. Hopefully she didn't steal anyone else's mom, because I don't know if that means she learned her lesson or not.
The problem is that she couldn't bring her mom home because she lost her mom at such an early age. She couldn't remember her mom's face.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think that she's in Paris somewhere with a faceless woman.
Just a monster. So then they tear up the garage picture and the awesome ripping mural disappears off the garage door. And it turns back to a shitty door that they still don't paint. Unless they do it afterwards. And Marshall's real mom comes out with snacks. But they say, not yet. We still got work to do or whatever. I didn't actually notice, but hopefully they took the number 2 pencil. I don't know if Sarah Bob took it with her. Usually at the end of each episode, they collect the spooky item. They have an evidence locker where they put all the cursed items from the town.
Oh, like Marshall Friday the 13th series.
Yeah, Marshall wears the key around his neck.
Is that what the key was from?
Yeah, so okay. All kinds of crazy shit in there.
That's a lot of power and temptation.
Yeah, but he never uses it. He's a true hero.
Wow.
True hero. Yeah, I was thinking that too. Like, if he had the pencil, like, take that pencil.
Take the pencil. Of course,
just draw ice cream sundaes and stuff.
Yeah, you could probably draw a decent enough ice cream sundae. I don't think they took the pencil, but the pencil got left behind.
Oh, it did. Well, then they definitely put it in their evidence locker, even if they didn't show it.
All right,
because Marshall is too responsible to leave that kind of thing lying around.
Fair enough.
So I don't think Sister does deserve a ton of praise, because when she sees the garage mural, she's like, whoa, what the fuck? I'm the artist. This is bullshit. Marshall's not an artist. He sucks. Praise me.
Well, she desperately wants attention and validation.
Brat.
No.
She's a needy brat.
I think it should be noted this story was written by a woman. And the female characters are pretty put upon.
Well, Sarah Bob is really sympathetic.
Sarah Bob is basically a servant in her family. Her mother's not around. And in Marshall's family, the older sister is overlooked and marginalized, ignored.
Yeah, I don't know. I think she's spoiled. Not in this episode, but...
I think you're a misogynist.
She's the typical older sister character who's just always shitty to Marshall and stuff.
Well, that's just a birth order thing.
Yep, I suppose
if you're going to have an older sister on TV.
You got to look out for your younger siblings. Jeez.
Look, I have 2 older
sisters.
If
we've learned nothing from the Bob family, it's that you got to look out for each other. Cripes.
I have 2 older sisters, and I can tell you, you know.
It doesn't always work that way.
Older siblings, you know, they get their way.
If you wanted the garage painted, I could have painted me on a unicorn.
So I kind of shot myself in the foot with this episode a little bit when it comes to putting up my spooks, because Erie, Indiana is more like weird. It's not scary.
I thought there was a lot of legitimate pathos.
Well, certainly there are plenty of pathos, but no scares.
And, you know, lessons learned. It was sort of a heartfelt show.
It's nothing if not heartfelt.
Sarah Bob learned her lessons. Marshall learned a little mini lesson about doing hard work yourself.
Yep.
Which was paralleled by the magic pencil and Sarah Bob getting what she wants without effort. Yeah, it was an interesting show.
So I really loved Erie, Indiana, obviously, when I was a kid, because I don't bring nothing to the table. Oh, I guess Goosebumps is kind of another show for me. It wasn't like my favorite thing in the world, but Erie, Indiana I loved. And right around the time I first moved to California, the box set of the whole series came out. It was only 1 season, so I had it, and it was like prominently displayed in my living room. And my roommate's friend came over and was like, oh, Erie, Indiana. Yeah, I used to work on that show. I was like a PA or whatever. And he told me all these fun behind-the-scenes stories about his involvement with the show and stuff. It was like, it was cool. It was a nice little taste of the Hollywood life.
Awesome.
For a show that I actually liked.
Did you feel like Marshall coming out from the East Coast to a strange place? You want to review these two? Put up your spooks?
All right.
Body count.
Body count three?
Three for the Hitchhiker.
Pretty good for Hitchhiker. Body count for Erie, Indiana was, I guess, zero.
I would say technically, zero.
Unless you count the like six fake family members that got evaporated. Which
it's
you can't really.
It's hard to say.
Because they were evaporated before they evaporated.
Didn't. Yeah.
Body count, that sweet ripping mural.
Scare factor. So for the Hitchhiker, I gotta say, Luther Redmond was a total psycho.
Yeah.
Like, he was
religious
really
fanatics,
intense.
Always a little scary.
Religious fanatics with flamethrowers.
The existential terror of being trapped in a place is, you know, off-putting and uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was sick. It was tense. So I'd say medium scary.
Pretty good. Yep. Erie, Indiana, no scares.
No scares.
No scariness.
Whatsoever.
Only weirdness.
Gross factor. Hitchhiker, gross factor, zero.
No, I wouldn't say zero. I thought the whether it was a real corpse or a fake corpse that was half burned, I thought that was kind of a neat look. It was she wasn't like gory burned, she was like ashy on one side completely, and I thought that was pretty neat and gross. Also, weird drifter sex. I don't know if Cal ever took a shower. Could have been pretty gross.
You know, they didn't show him showering.
She definitely got a UTI
but it was
after that.
Definitely drifter sex.
In the hay. All right.
Drifter sex in the barn. I'll bump it up to low gross.
Yeah, UTIs are gross.
Okay, Erie, Indiana. Gross factor.
I hate those little kids are all gross.
Yes.
Running around in their underpants.
Oh, when Bob was naked, running around,
gross, naked
cupping
little
his
kids.
Balls in his butthole.
Yeah.
That was unnecessary.
Wildly.
That was about as much nudity as was in The Hitchhiker.
Yep. And her dad was like dirty and burping and stuff. Pretty
was
gross.
Pretty foul.
Yeah.
What the factor? At the end of Hitchhiker, when Luther busted out with the flamethrower. I was like, whoa, that kind of bumped me a little bit. Just getting used to the flow of that show, The Hitchhiker, where the host of the show
place.
Might just step in and start narrating. That was a little bit of a what the factor.
Yep. I think what the factor was sufficiently high.
How about for Erie, Indiana?
I think what the factor, I don't know, if you know Erie, Indiana, you know that weird things are supposed to happen and it's supposed to be weird, so.
They explicitly state that in the beginning.
So the only real what the factor would be in trying to figure out what tearing up the drawings does, what creating the drawings does.
Yeah, there was some mystery there. I would say that registers on the what the factor theme.
Hitchhiker's art was way darker, that's for sure. Erie, Indiana's art was hopeful. I mean, it was very on theme in terms of art because she kept saying, I am a real artist. And like, that's all she wanted was to like create things the way she wanted them to be.
Her art came from suffering, but it came from a hopeful place.
Yeah, it came from positivity.
But whew! Luther's art was came from a very dark place.
Yeah. So theme art high in both, theme dark art highest in Hitchhiker. TKO, Hitchhiker.
But I enjoyed them both.
Mm-hmm.
And I look forward to many other episodes of Erie, Indiana. Did you see that Joe Dante was the creative consultant on Erie, Indiana?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That was something I was aware of.
When I was looking up credits, Sarah Bob... or the actress that played Sarah Bob. Oddly, she played a lot of roles named Sarah.
Again, very popular name back in those
days.
What
we didn't mention was at the end of the episode, while she's in Paris, Sarah Bob manifests this weird man nanny in like a French maid outfit to whip her family into shape.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that part.
And
it was a Schwarzenegger.
I looked up that Schwarzenegger character. And he, coincidentally, played a whole bunch of roles with the name Stavros.
Yeah, maybe his name is Stavros.
It's not.
Oh.
So I was really surprised that you did not mention Tales from the Crypt, Corman's Calamity. This is a previous Put Up Your Spooks episode.
Put Up Your Spooks? Where do I sign?
But in Corman's Calamity, Harry was taking this magic boner pill where everything he would draw would come to life. And at the end, when he achieves his dreams, he stops taking the pills. And Sarah Bob does the same thing. when she finally reunites with her mother and gets away from her terrible family, she doesn't take the pencil with her. She's not interested in shaping reality.
Maybe the pencil can't leave Erie, Indiana.
Oh, that's a good idea. I was thinking it was interesting that it was a pencil, because just like the boner pills in Cartman's Calamity that probably have a limited prescription, the pencil's
gonna run
would
out.
Eventually run down to a nub, and that would actually
or
be kind of interesting.
It doesn't.
Oh, I guess it is a magic pencil.
It is magic. Although, if you're going by pencil rules, it would.
I am applying pencil rules to the number two pencil.
Also, its eraser would run out way faster than it than the,
yes,
the lead.
Yes, but when she erases her signature, it's with a regular eraser, not the magic pencil eraser.
Okay, then. There are probably other Erie number two pencils kicking around the world of stuff. I gotta say, I thought we were going to be seeing a lot more clay sculpture, though, in the episode of... The first, like, 15 minutes of Hitchhiker, I forgot that we were doing, like, art or sculpture episodes.
It starts off in a barn, and he's looking at that coffin, but I don't know. I guess I just knew it was about a sculptor. But then he's a photographer, and he has this big, long, dramatic spiel about how he spent his life with photography, but then he makes two perfect mannequin copies of them. He was multi-talented.
Real Renaissance man.
Whereas Sarah Bob could draw dresses, costumes, portraits, bikes. She was pretty talented as well.
She was so talented that her black and white drawings leapt into full-colored life.
Maybe it was like a demonic pact where every time you sign your name,
ooh, a little piece
you
of
make
your soul.
Something. Yeah. Mm.
And is she in real Paris, or is she in drawing Paris?
She could have been in drawing Paris,
ooh.
And she did dispatch some kind of hellish man-nanny in a French maid outfit. Yeah.
And she can't... Although, yeah, so she sent that drawing of the man-nanny from Paris, and it came to life, which leads me to believe she's got the Erie number two pencil.
Or was it because she did the drawing and signed it in Paris and sent it to Erie, Indiana, and once it crossed the
she
state
still would have had to
boundary.
Use the pencil, unless the magic was in her the whole time.
Ah, shit. All right. Case not closed. Yeah.
All cases in Erie, Indiana are open cases. No shuts.
Still don't believe me? You will.
So, I did this sketch, and I want you to look at it and tell me what you think.
That's Dr. Vink and the Crypt Keeper?
It's us.
Rerun for your life!
And read between the teeth!